All right, so we are continuing our look at Mark chapter 5. Hopefully we'll continue, or rather finish, Mark chapter 5 today. We looked at the woman with the flow of blood yesterday, or last week rather. And again, Mark likes to sandwich these stories together. Mark starts talking about Jairus coming to see Jesus concerning his sick daughter. We see this in Mark chapter 5, verses 21 through 24. We see that they are gathering, or that there's so many people around Jesus that it's keeping Jesus from getting to Jairus' house where his daughter is. At the same time, this woman shows up asking for help. She touches the hem of Jesus' garment, and she is healed from her flow of blood. And we recognize that as we were looking at this chapter, this deals with all manner of ceremonially unclean things. We can see that there was the dead, that there was the unclean spirit earlier in chapter five. Named Legion. We see that there was that he was living among the dead in the tombs. So another unclean spirit there, or another unclean activity there going on. And then we see the woman with the flow of blood, and that was something that was ceremonially unclean. We see that in Leviticus chapter 15. Now we're going to see something else that is ritually unclean, and it's again amazing to see that someone like this is willing to go through willing to do something that would make him unclean, especially a Jew at this time. So we're going to continue this story. Let's go ahead and read verses 35 to the end of the chapter. I'll go ahead and read that. While he was still speaking, Jesus was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house, who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not be afraid, only believe." And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Then he took the father, then he took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumi," which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given to her to eat. So this is, another remarkable event, telling of Jesus' power. Every one of the miracles that we see of Jesus is telling of Jesus' power, of different kinds of power. We see at the latter part of chapter 4, we see the power he had over the physical world, over the weather, over the sea. Here we see in chapter 5 the power over unclean spirits. Another unclean activity, unclean thing in chapter 5, which slipped my mind, was the swine. The pigs that the demons were cast into. So another unclean thing happening there. So we see Jesus has this power over all these demons here in earlier in chapter 5. And then later we see he has the power over the unclean flow of blood, the uncleanness associated with that. And now we see something else happening. So we note that a messenger from Jairus' house comes and says that his daughter is dead. Don't bother, don't annoy the teacher anymore. Don't bother Jesus anymore. And one of the things that we should recognize is that Jesus, is he ever bothered by the things that we ask? Even when it seems too late? Is he ever bothered by those things?
I think so. I think there's one situation where there's a couple of times where Jesus shows some a little bit of frustration. Yeah. Where he says, you know, how long shall I bear with you? You know, or where he sighs, you know, he heals the guy and he says, you know, and he just sighs.
Yeah.
You know, that there's some evidence that Jesus definitely sometimes felt the weight of it all.
But most of those things are with unbelief. How long shall I deal with your unbelief?
Right.
How long shall I deal with your attitudes about these things? But here we see that if people believe and want something from Jesus and understand that he is, and ask in faith, is he bothered by that? I don't think so. Even if it seems too late. Again, he contrasts fear with faith. He says, don't be afraid in verse 36. Do not be afraid, only believe. Don't be afraid at this news. Believe in me.
There's an interesting point right before that where the guy comes to him and says, your daughter is dead. Don't bother Jesus anymore.
Yeah.
And he says the teacher, so I mean that would have been rabbi probably initially,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
So he respected Jesus as a teacher, the man who brought the news. But he thought, okay, this guy's healed people, but no, she's dead. She's beyond help.
Yeah.
Right. He limited Jesus' power.
Yeah. Again, they didn't know that he had the ability to raise people from the dead by this point. I mean, only the disciples saw him with the wind and the waves.
Yeah.
Many people have seen him with demons prior to this moment, of course, with the flow of blood, different things. But raising someone from the dead, that seems almost... But they had instances in the Old Testament where prophets raised people from the dead.
Just a couple.
Just a few, yes, granted. But even Abraham believed, it says in Hebrews 11, believed that even if, to keep God's promise, even if Isaac were to be killed, were to die, were to be sacrificed, then he believed that God had the ability to raise Isaac from the dead. And so it is a possibility to believe that he is that he has that power. But they may have forgotten. I mean, Elijah raised he did raise someone from the dead. Yes, he raised someone from the dead. Elisha raised someone from the dead. And not once, but twice. The first time was a woman's son. The second time was a soldier who was killed and touched his bones. So it wasn't even him who healed it. It was his bones who healed. God, through the bones of Elisha, healed this man. So, yes, it did happen in the past, but again, only a couple times that we are aware of. And so we see here that Jesus, these people weren't sure. These people didn't think that he could do that. Here's the first of three instances in Mark where we see that an inner circle within Christ's inner circle is something that's happening. We note that his inner circle are the 12 disciples. And then we see that here is an even more closely knit inner circle. So we note that he has dozens of disciples. We see the 70 in Luke chapter 10. We see in Mark chapter 4 there were others with the 12 that were involved there. And so we see that he does have other disciples other than the 12. So his inner circle is the 12, and here we have these three, Peter, James, and John, that are even closer. And again, first of three instances in Mark where we see these names, where these three people are called for a specific purpose. This indicates a special event that he didn't want too widely known, at least right away. We'll note that it's almost impossible to keep such a thing like this secret, but at least it won't balloon out, almost like, what's the saying that a lie can get around the world several times while the truth is still getting his pants on?
Yeah.
but this, of course, is the truth, but still rumors and things like this can spread, and so news like this, especially sensational news, like someone being raised from the dead, is something that that he is going to face here. And we see at the very end of this, I mean, can you imagine recognizing that Jesus has the power to raise people from the dead? Oh, can you bring back so-and-so? Can you bring back so-and-so?
The mob scene.
None
of these things are showy. You know, this is part of the same thing you're saying, right? Is Jesus could have said, bring her out in the public square and let's get everybody in town, you know, and I'm going to make a big deal out of it and I'm going to raise her from the dead, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't do that. And you see that in almost all of these things. There's only a few cases, the feeding of the large groups, but Jesus doesn't stand up and say, I'm going to perform a great miracle, watch me, and all of a sudden everything appears. He just puts it in the baskets, and as they're going around, more stuff keeps coming out of the baskets. I mean,
yeah.
It's this notion of this subtle, you know, there's that, I guess meekness is part of that notion. He is obviously the creator, he's incredibly powerful, but he doesn't go and trumpet it.
Right. That's a really good point. He's very quiet about these things. He doesn't try to make a big show. Unlike, you know, I always try to compare Jesus, these healings here, to faith healers of today. And we know that very often they do make a big scene out of it. Or at least...
They tell you ahead of time. They say, next month we're going to raise someone from the dead. I mean,
yeah.
It's not something that just happens.
Yeah. It's... And it's all a sham.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a sham. Especially as we can see with the virus going around, people are much less likely to even so-called faith healers. So outside of Jairus' house, we see that there are people mourning loudly. Now that there are different Greek words for the word to express the idea to mourn, to weep, to cry, and of course we have those in English too. But you know, for instance, in John 11:35, Jesus wept. We know that particular word indicates a weeping that is very quiet, very somber, not hysterical like some. Like the kind of weeping that's going on here. The kind of weeping that's going on here is a good deal more hysterical, a good deal more emotional, good deal louder than what we see what happened with when Jesus wept when Lazarus had died.
Do you think that this included, in the Middle East, in India they have it for sure, in the Middle East, they have the notion of a professional mourner.
Yeah.
Somebody who wails very loudly and very skillfully. And that's even referenced in the scripture. There's some places where it says, go call the mourners.
Yeah.
You know, and so you imagine, you wonder if some of that was going on as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I do have on here that they did have professional mourners back then who came and wailed loudly at times like this. You know, and it's kind of strange. Jairus was just told that his daughter died. And we see that not long after that, the mourners come. Maybe they were expecting something like this to happen, and then the mourners were not far away. Or maybe so I don't know how it happens exactly. Do they hire the mourners?
Or did they show up and mourn hoping to get a tip?
Yes, exactly. That's another thing. And that does happen sometimes.
Yes, yeah.
That does happen, and I've noticed that in some places. All right. So when I was in Africa, there were people who, taxi drivers who would wait at the airport and pretend to be helpful, but they, I did this job for you, you pay me now, or you give me a tip or something like that. So So it's they are helpful, but you have to expect to pay them for it. So could be very similar to that. We're not exactly told that that's what happened here, that these are the professional mourners, but I do think that it's likely in this case. We note that Jairus wasn't there to hire them, but perhaps his wife did, or perhaps another close relative. Again, maybe they just showed up and were expecting a handout or expecting some money for their job, for their work. But I don't think that these were close to the family. And the reason is they ridiculed Jesus for his statements. He said in verse 38-39, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And then the next sentence, "And they ridiculed him." So I think, you know, thinking about this, if I were a relative or fairly close to the deceased, and someone said, "Oh, this person isn't dead, just sleeping," the intent that he could possibly, but wait a second, what are you saying? I wouldn't ridicule. I'd be like, I'd be trying to latch on to any semblance of hope that this person is still living. If I were could potentially live again, if I were close to the person who had died.
So we have that perspective now because we know Jesus raised people from the dead too. You would imagine, just like the guy that said, "Don't bother the teacher anymore," that they said, it's so far out of possibility that you're just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you're just crazy. You don't understand. She's dead. Yeah. She's not coming back. But one way or the other, it does seem interesting that they were ridiculing him. You know, Jesus didn't come in and tell you, "Ta-da, I'm here to raise the daughter," you know. I mean, he just comes in and says, you know, "She's not that way."
Yeah. So. To me, it indicates a lack of emotional connection to the deceased. Mm-hmm. And so I think it indicates that these were indeed professional mourners. We see that the child is sleeping. You know, this is a common euphemism for death that we see in the scriptures. I have on the board Acts chapter 7, verse 60, where Stephen had been stoned, and it says he fell asleep. But most notably, Lazarus in John chapter 11. Let's turn to that one real quick. Look at John chapter 11. You know, this is one story, the raising of Lazarus, that I'm surprised is only found in one of the gospel accounts because of how amazing it is, how powerful how dramatic a display it is of his power. And yet it's only found here. But it is something that's interesting to note here. Let's look at verses 11 through 14. Sam, do you have it?
Sure.
Go ahead, please read.
These things he said, and after that he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up." Then his disciples said, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well." However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking a rest and sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him."
All right. So it seems from this passage that it was not a euphemism that they were very familiar with until Jesus came onto the scene. So yes, he fell asleep. We note that Jesus says that he fell asleep, that Lazarus had fallen asleep. We note that this woman, a girl, 12-year-old girl, had fallen asleep, Jairus' daughter. And then we see Stephen had fallen asleep. And we see, again, the euphemism continues on in the Christian writings, in the Christian scriptures in the New Testament. But I think this is a euphemism that is fairly, maybe unique to Jesus. I don't know. I haven't studied the etymology of that particular, or the history of that euphemism, but it seems that they weren't familiar with it, or if it occurred before Jesus, it wasn't as common as until Jesus had popularized it.
I think the only thing that you see a lot in the Old Testament is the notion of resting with their fathers.
Yeah.
Right. So there's this notion of rest, but not sleep in that sense. It was never referred to as sleep.
Yeah. We do note, I believe in I think it's in John 8, maybe some other passages where Jesus says that God is a God of the living, not the dead. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, God of the living, not the dead. And so that would indicate that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are indeed living, but
somewhere else.
Yeah, living in an eternal abode, not living here on this earth perhaps, but living in heaven, as are all those who die faithful. Any comments from the, or questions from the stream?
No, not yet.
Okay, good. All right, so he called the child's parents and the three disciples into the room with him and the girl, with him and the girl. So he's in here with this 12-year-old girl who had just died. Along with the child's parents and the three. So all together in the room were six people plus the girl who died. So he takes the child by the hand. And we might think that's very sweet, that's very nice. But she just died. She is a dead body. That is a dead body that he is touching. She is now unclean because she is dead. And yet he is deliberately touching her. Similar to touching the leper in Mark chapter 1, we see what some of the rules, I don't think I'm going to take the time to read them, but some of the rules for touching a dead body and the uncleanness that is associated with that, we see in Leviticus chapter 21, verses 1 through 4, and also Numbers chapter 19, verses 11 through 22. He touched a dead body, and therefore he was, at least if he were any other person, if he were any other Jew, he would be unclean, along with any who are in the room, because if you are in the room with a dead body, you are unclean. But again, does he have power over that? Because if she's not really dead and merely sleeping, then he can touch her. And that's okay. He has that power over that which is ritually unclean, enough to raise the dead. So that, you know, there is no ritual to be, to make yourself clean again once you've been dead. There is no ritual for that. Just like, unlike the fact that there is a ritual for being healed after you were healed from a flow of blood, we see in Leviticus 15, to be healed after having had leprosy, we see in Leviticus 14. We see that there are rituals for that, but there's no ritual for being clean again after having risen from the dead. So he has power over these things. He has power over these things.
You'd also wonder if, for all that they would have been, according to the law of Moses, ritually unclean, if Jesus raises her from the dead anymore, she's not dead anymore, so are they unclean from a dead body? No, because she's not dead.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That too.
It's one of those...
Rabbis would have argued about that one for a very long time.
Yes, yes. If indeed they believed in Jesus. all right, so... He states the phrase in Aramaic, Talitha kumi. Talitha kumi. This tells us two things. First, he spoke in Aramaic most of the time, if not all of the time. And that's kind of an indication of the fact that, or the, an understanding that what we have in the New Testament here is a translation of what he said. But so he, and it's very likely he did speak in Aramaic because most of his ministry was to the Jews, right? So, and they understood Aramaic. They generally spoke Aramaic. Many of them understood Greek, obviously, because that was the dominant language at the time. One of the interesting things, by comparison, when I was in Africa, in Ghana specifically, there were two languages that most people knew. Three, if you count their local language, their native language. But there was Twi, which is the language that is that is nationalized throughout, the local language anyway, that's nationalized throughout Ghana, the language of the elite, of the governing authorities, and then English, which is the official language. So most people understood English and Chui. So that is kind of similar to what's going on here. Most people, in fact, everybody who's a Jew understands Aramaic, and of course Hebrew to some extent, because their scriptures are written in Hebrew, and of course Greek, because they are, that's sort of the language of the empire, or at least the language of trade, let me put it that way. And maybe some understood Latin at the time too. Yeah.
Dan made a comment that said the little girl was dead to those around her, but she was not dead to Christ. Mm. And it's also, I was thinking that as well, that she's 12 years old.
Yeah.
You know, that, and you don't see a situation, I mean, Jesus raised Lazarus, but Lazarus was a disciple. You don't see Jesus raising the dead of somebody who's an alien sinner in that sense, right? It's not really talked about in those cases, but you don't see a clear example of something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to remember, there's Tabitha in Acts who was raised from the dead.
There's Eutychus.
Acts 20. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to remember who else, if there was anyone else. There may have been.
Lazarus and Jairus' daughter, I think.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the list.
Again, this is.
He did tell the 70 to go. When he sent the disciples out, he told them to raise the dead. Yeah. So heal the sick, raise the dead. So there was probably someone going.
Yeah, just like there are plenty of places where it says Jesus healed somebody,
right.
And healed a bunch of people at some point. So there's likely not a one thing that we can say this is the only time it happened, because there are other instances that are just not recorded because he did so much. In fact, John says he did so much that we couldn't record it all. Here are just the things that you need to believe. All right, so that's one thing. He spoke in Aramaic most of the time. And number two, here is another detail that gives evidence of an eyewitness account, where it says exactly what he says in Aramaic. Peter saw this. Peter saw what was happening. Remember the phrase that Jesus used and relate it to Mark. And so he's writing this here. It also gives an indication, so that Mark is translating it, we see, for his Roman audience, so that they know what Jesus said, how it is translated. Little girl, I say to you, arise. Or simply, little girl, arise. All right. The girl immediately arose, it says. Now, Mark uses the word immediately very often. It's one of the most common words. One of the words he uses very often. And sometimes it does mean what we think of the word immediately. Sometimes it does mean it happened right then. Other times it means, he uses the word euthus, which is the Greek word. He uses it as a transition. And then this happened. Understand that to be. And we can understand that based on the other gospel accounts. And so, in fact, he uses it earlier in chapter 5 in verse 2. When he come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. And so, based on some of the geography, we understand that's not immediately as we understand it, but something that just happened
very quickly thereafter.
Yeah, it happened
soon.
Next. Yeah.
Right.
But here, I believe it's an indication that it is immediate. I mean, he's in the house. It's not like it's something that they'd have to wait for a very long time for. There's no indication in the text that it is anything other than immediate. Immediately, the girl arose. This is a true miracle. And the people were amazed about this. It says they were overcome with great amazement. That is a superlative in the Greek. Amazed with great amazement, essentially. what's said there. All right, we know that he has power over the wind and the waves, over thousands of demons at once, over disease and uncleanness, and finally, he even has the power over death itself. Even when we revive people today, we restart a stopped heart. We resume someone's breathing. It's not like on TV. I mean, we get kind of inundated, because we don't see that every day, especially if we're not in the medical profession. We don't see people's heart restarted or their breathing resumed. Very few of us have likely seen that, and then somebody come in and revive the person. So we get influenced by what we see on TV. That's an immediate thing we see on TV very often. But it's not like that. It takes a long time for someone to recover enough from that to rise up, to walk, and even to eat. And yet she did these things. And Jesus even said that she should be fed. That this is that. And I think another account, I don't remember exactly which one, says that she expressed a desire for food. I'm hungry. So Jesus says, hey, give her something to eat.
So that's evidence of the complete and instantaneous healing.
Exactly.
It wasn't a medical thing he performed.
Right, it wasn't CPR.
Some time to kind of get back going.
Right, exactly. All right. Only five people witness this miracle. Six if you count the girl. So it's funny that he says that no one should, strictly, he says in verse 43, he commanded them strictly that no one should know it. Only five people, six if you count the girl, saw this, but it would be hard to keep it a secret, don't you think? I mean, despite what Jesus said, even if all five, six of them keep it a secret, I mean, everyone knew she was dead. The mourners had come.
The mourners are still outside, probably.
Yeah, the mourners had come. If she comes out alive, I mean, they're going to know what happened, or at least have some idea. What could have happened besides Jesus raising her? So, last question, and I think we have enough time for it. Looking at all this, what about near-death experiences today? A few years ago, there was a big market for people hearing stories about heaven. You remember all that? Many of them were later retracted, which is no surprise since they're all hoaxes anyway. For instance, heaven is real, or heaven is for real. I don't remember the exact name, but something to that effect, where a little child allegedly goes to heaven and reports what he saw. Well, if you think about it for a second, Paul actually did go up to the third heaven and said he couldn't say what he saw in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. So if he couldn't, then certainly no one today, if that were to happen, could or would be allowed to.
There's also a huge, you know, for every near-death experience that comes back saying they saw something that they interpret as heaven.
Yeah.
There are near-death experiences of people who are not believers who say, well, I experienced this. I mean, for one, if you're having a near-death experience, your brain is doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, but if God was going to let us, I mean, why do people want that? Because basically that means you don't have to have faith anymore. Right? It's like, you know, here's the, you don't have to believe. I'll tell you what it is. And you wonder about that, because all through the scriptures we're told that faith is the evidence of things not seen. You know, that's what's going to save us.
You know, one of the things I note whenever someone comes back from the dead in the scriptures, they don't say anything. They don't say about what they experienced. We don't hear a word from this girl or anyone else who was raised from the dead about what they experienced when they were dead, except for Jesus, let alone telling us what heaven is like. We don't see this. Lazarus doesn't say anything about it. This girl doesn't say anything about it. The boys in 1 and 2 Kings don't say anything about it that Elijah raised, nor does the soldier say anything about that who had died. Nor does Tabitha or Eutychus. Nobody, at least it's not recorded, what is said here. And you'd think they'd be all wondering, what was it like? What did you see? Things like that. But, you know, I have a few thoughts on that. Why do you suppose they didn't say anything?
Well, we don't have it recorded, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You're sure somebody asked them?
Yeah, maybe.
Very likely somebody asked them at some point. But we don't have it recorded, so yeah. what's your thought? Would they have said?
Some latch on to this and say it is evidence of soul sleeping. Now, soul sleeping is the idea that that when someone dies, their soul is unconscious until the judgment, that they don't experience anything or are conscious of anything. Now, we know that's not true from Luke chapter 16, that the rich man and Lazarus were both, well, at least we know, we recognize that the rich man was conscious. He understood what was going on.
So was Abraham.
So is Abraham, and he was there too. That's right. Good point. Thank you. There's no indication Lazarus necessarily was, but we do see that the others were. So we know that that's not necessarily the case. But, so I think this is a medical reason for why this isn't the case. I think it's simply because our bodies are here on this earth and our memories are stored in our brains. I think that's why. If your soul leaves your body and then is returned to it later, you will have no recollection of anything that has occurred during this time, since no new memories are forming in your brain. I think that's why they have no recollection of what heaven is like.
But that's speculation.
My thought?
Right.
Yes, of course.
Right. Because we don't know what you were. Do you form new memories after you're dead? We don't know.
it is speculation, but
it doesn't happen in your brain. That's for sure, because your brain's dead.
Yeah. this girl just died, so there may be some neurons.
Not that you study neurophysiology. Don't bet on it.
Yeah. So I do think that they're not forming new memories outside of, if their soul leaves their body, they're not forming any new memories, so they don't remember anything whenever they return to their bodies. So that's my thought on that. Again, as you say, it's speculation, but I don't think it's blind speculation. I think it's an educated guess, because that's where our memories form. We understand that from psychology. So, do you have any thoughts on that? Anybody on the stream have thoughts on that?
No, not yet. No.
Okay. All right. Next week we'll look at Mark chapter 6, and we'll start that. All right. We'll see you then.